This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Wildfire progress. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Tuesday, July 13. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Officials say firefighters have made gains on two blazes burning in the west, the Beckworth Complex in California and the Bootleg Fire in Oregon.
For the second time in 3 months, Democrats in Texas have staged a walkout in effort to reject a voting bill proposed by Republicans.
In sports, baseball's All-Star game is tonight in Denver, plus Pete Alonso of the Mets defended his title in the home run derby.
And the rationing of a last resort COVID treatment known as ECMO.
This is sort of like a heart-lung machine. It's similar in concept, where the blood goes out of your body. It's connected to a series of pieces of equipment that add oxygen, like your lungs would do if they were working, take out the carbon dioxide and then pump that blood back in, and it helps the lungs rest.
Sherry Fink at the New York Times on choosing which patients get the ECMO treatment and which are denied. Firefighters in California and Oregon have made progress battling two large wildfires that have burned around 240,000 acres. It's part of an extreme heat wave scorching parts of the West. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Officials say the Beckworth Complex, the largest wildfire burning in California, has burned more than 91,000 acres. It was 26% contained by last evening. It was sparked by lightning in Plumas National Forest in Northern California near the Nevada border. Around 20 homes were destroyed in the small town of Doyle. In Southern Oregon, the Bootleg Fire had grown by around 5,000 acres, a slower pace than in recent days. It's estimated at more than 150,800 acres, or around 234 square miles. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Jake Cagle, by the way, California Incident Management Operations Section Chief, said the probability of ignition is 100%, which means any ember or match in a fuel bed will cause a fire. Dozens of Democratic state lawmakers in the Texas House have fled the state to deny the Republican-controlled state legislature the quorum necessary to pass voting legislation during a special session. Democratic House members said they were boarding chartered airplanes bound for Washington, D.C., where they hope to draw national support for their fight against the bills. Representative Sophronia Thompson.
We are refusing to be allowed to remain Republican hostages in the Texas House of Representatives.
The final number of those who've left may not be known until the House is called to order this morning. Republican Governor Greg Abbott.
If these people want to be hanging out wherever they're hanging out on this taxpayer-paid junket, they're going to have to be prepared to do it for well over a year. As soon as they come back in the state of Texas, they will be arrested. They will be cabined inside the Texas Capitol until they get their job done.
The current special session, by the way, was called after a previous walkout by Democrats back in May. Meanwhile, Democrats began fundraising off the walkout as it began yesterday. Things remain tense in Cuba. The communist government yesterday stepped up its crackdown against demonstrators and activists following massive street protests on Sunday. The government yesterday cut off most communications with the outside world, deployed security forces, and arrested more than 100 people. Meanwhile, President Biden said the United States stands firmly with the people of Cuba. Francis Suarez is the mayor of Miami and a Cuban American.
As Cubans here in Miami, and particularly the new arrival Cubans that we saw, many of which were in front of Versailles yesterday, thousands of them, what they are seeing is their family members being beaten, an inability for them to communicate, and it's a very, very difficult situation.
In televised remarks, by the way, Cuban President Miguel Diaz-Canel accused the U.S. of pursuing, quote, a policy of economic suffocation to provoke social unrest in the country. The worst economic crisis in 30 years in Cuba has resulted in acute shortages of food, fuel, and medicine. Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business, and be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today.
Thanks for spending part of your Tuesday with us. President Biden has visited a string of swing districts and states in the last month, underscoring his determination to help his party in next year's midterm races and perhaps help himself in 2024. More from Amy Parnes, senior correspondent at The Hill. Amy, what's he doing?
Well, he's doing something that's very interesting. He's going to a string of swing states and districts where Trump was very popular and Trump won in the last election, and he's spending time there. His last few trips that he's taken have all been to either purple districts or even a red district. And that surprised a lot of people that he's spending so much time doing this already. And clearly, while he's not being so overt politically, nothing in politics is coincidental. Yeah. So he's kind of making a point, and some might say is laying the groundwork for what the midterm cycle will look like coming up.
And what's it like when he visits a red district?
I think that it's probably a mixed review maybe, but I think that what he's trying to do, he's always sort of been, I think his brand has been to not only just please his party, but to reach across the aisle and to appeal to a lot of independents. I think independents in particular were a very definite key to his victory last year, and I think that that's sort of what he's trying to continue to do, to kind of speak to everyone. And this is very different than what former President Trump did, which was to go to very red states and red districts and campaign there.
We're speaking with Amy Parnes, senior correspondent at The Hill. She's written a piece entitled Biden's Midterm Strategies Start to Come into Focus. What else are we seeing?
So I think that what he's going to do, it's funny, a lot of people kind of said, well, it'll be interesting to see if he is going to really play in the midterms. He was really popular when he was a vice president, going to these places where someone like Barack Obama couldn't go, or Nancy Pelosi would be shunned. So not many people would go there. And also, he was just as popular when President Trump was in office. And so I think a lot of people are curious to see if he has that staying power in a lot of these places, and he'll continue to go there. And it appears that he does. You know, he's not trying to be very political and going to these blue districts specifically. He's trying to kind of spread the wealth and appeal to a lot of these people who are in the middle. And I think one thing that is really interesting is he hasn't really been attacking Trump in many of these places. He's kind of been drawing the attention to his policies and trying to turn the page.
Wow. All right. So you point out he has been also to places like Michigan,
right,
Georgia, mm-hmm, Wisconsin. Is that perhaps a sneak peek that he is seriously considering running for re-election in 2024?
He said that he has, why wouldn't he run again? I think a lot of people want to throw cold water on that and say, no, he's the oldest president, we don't think he'll run again. But he is basically saying, why wouldn't I run? I think that he kind of has to say that, or okay, he'll become a lame duck. But I do think either he's doing that to lay the groundwork for himself or his successor.
Does he need a legislative win, Amy?
Yes, I think so. But I think he can already sort of tout his success with COVID. Even though COVID is spiking in some places, he can say that he helped to bring the vaccine along and to kind of curb that a little bit. And he can also point to other things that came from the recovery, like the child wealth tax, and all these other things that stemmed from it. And I think that he'll probably do that as well.
Is it possible that if Democrats pass a bill or two through reconciliation, that he looks heavy-handed in the eyes of voters?
He could, and I think that's why he kind of wants to, he definitely wants to show that he is, was involved, but it's a very delicate dance, if you will.
Thanks, Amy. Amy Parnes, senior correspondent at The Hill. By the way, President Biden is in Philadelphia today to talk up voting legislation. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Wildfires that torched homes and forced thousands to evacuate are burning across 10 parched western states, and the largest in Oregon is threatening California's power supply. Nearly 60 wildfires are tearing through bone-dry timber and brush from Alaska to Wyoming. This California resident spoke with NBC.
I'd planned on staying, but when you see the firemen running like that, it's probably a good idea to go ahead and leave.
In Northern California, a combined pair of lightning-ignited blazes called the Beckwith Complex is less than 25% surrounded.
Number two.
Democrats in the Texas legislature have bolted for Washington and say they are ready to remain there for weeks in a second revolt against a GOP overhaul of election laws. Democratic State Representative Chris Turner.
There is no more time. You must pass strong federal voter protection legislation, and you must do it now. You must do it before the August recess.
Republican Governor Greg Abbott says he will keep calling special sessions through next year if necessary and raise the possibility of Democrats facing arrest upon returning home.
Number three.
The U.S. has seen a string of COVID-19 outbreaks tied to summer camps in recent weeks in places such as Texas, Illinois, Florida, Missouri, and Kansas in what some fear could be a preview of the upcoming school year. In some cases, the outbreaks have spread from the camp to the broader community. The clusters have come as a number of newly confirmed cases of the coronavirus has reversed course, surging more than 60% over the past 2 weeks from an average of 12,000 a day to around 19,500. Nearly 1 million people in France made vaccine appointments in a single day after the president cranked up pressure on everyone to get vaccinated to save summer vacation and the French economy. Vaccination will be obligatory for all healthcare workers by September 15th. Pete Alonso danced to his second straight home run derby title on a night of record long balls in the thin Rocky Mountain air of Coors Field. The New York Mets first baseman hit 74 total home runs and edged Trey Mancini.
I'm a power hitter, and for me, I think I'm the best power hitter on the planet. And being able to showcase that and really put on a fun display for fans, I just think that it's truly a dream come true for me.
Alonso becomes the third player to win consecutive titles.
He's got some confidence, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
Best power hitter on the planet, he says. Coming up next, getting your kid his or her first smartphone.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for joining us. If you are the parent of a tween or teen, you have likely heard this question in some form on repeat. Can I have my own phone? It's something to consider as kids prepare to go back to school. So what should you know when introducing your children to their first smartphone? Brett Molina, reporter at USA Today, spoke to parents and experts about what to consider when approaching that big tech milestone. Brett, give us guidance.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting time for parents because this is, you know, COVID, the pandemic and all the restrictions related to it are lifting. And also a lot of kids around that age are reaching a time where they're a lot more mobile than we're used to. And so a lot of times parents are thinking, well, how can I, you know, just kind of keep tabs on my kids, as they do these things. They might have different after school activities. They're also older. They might be doing some other things with friends on their own. So you want a way to keep in touch with them. And that's where I think we're seeing a lot of parents consider a smartphone. And there was a recent survey from Pew that mentioned 73% of American parents believe around 12 years old is the right age for kids to have their first phone. So this is kind of the time where parents are really thinking about, you know, taking that plunge.
Okay. Which, if you have a seemingly mature 10-year-old, doesn't mean you couldn't get one then, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not necessarily the age that's the most important thing. And a lot of the experts that I talked to mentioned this. Younger, there might be a kid that's younger than 12 that might, you know, that has the emotional and mental maturity to have a phone. there might be children that are older than that. You might want to go 13, 14. It just really depends on the child. If you feel like they have the maturity to be able to handle a phone, also the responsibility, because the last thing you want is to get them this brand new phone and then they end up losing it within a week, which is something kids are known to do sometimes.
Right.
So there's a lot of those, a lot of those different factors to consider.
We're speaking with Brett Molina, consumer tech reporter at USA Today. His story is called Your Child's First Smartphone, What You Should Consider Before Buying. Maybe you're getting your kid one as we emerge from the pandemic, maybe before they go back to school in the fall. But one of the big things, obviously, since as parents, we often operate on the defensive or in fear of what we might do wrong. So once the kid gets the phone, how about restrictions or limits to place on it?
Well, obviously, I think one of the first things you want to do when you get the phone is check all the parental controls. iPhone, for example, they have lots of different options that you can use to restrict what your child sees on their phone. You can restrict purchases from places like iTunes or from the App Store. You can also restrict the types of content that they're seeing as well. So if there's movies or TV shows that you don't think are appropriate, you can block those as well. Also, the websites they visit. They even have a family sharing option where you can actually, the kids have to request apps from a parent in order to be able to watch them on their device. Google also has similar systems in place where you can do a lot of the same stuff. There are also third-party apps that a lot of parents can use as well, like OurPact or Bark. And they go a step further. You can do a lot of the restrictions that you have natively on the iPhone or Android, but you can even do stuff like monitor the messages or emails that your kids receive as well if you want just an extra layer of just kind of watching what your kids are doing.
Thanks, Brett. Brett Molina, reporter at USA Today. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon.
Your brain's morning workout. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday, July 13. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Progress on a couple of big western wildfires. Meanwhile, temperatures remain well above average in the west through the week. President Biden visits Philadelphia to advocate for voting legislation. Cuba cracks down on anti-government protesters. It's National French Fry Day. Watch for promotions and giveaways at places like McDonald's and Wendy's. Emmy nominations released today for the best in TV. And what happens when you dump your unwanted goldfish into a nearby lake or pond? That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Credit Karma. Whether you want cash back, travel rewards, or to consolidate debt, Credit Karma can help you find the offers that fit your goals. Apply with confidence today at creditkarma.com/radio. The Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine is once again raising concerns. The FDA yesterday warned about a possible link between that vaccine and the autoimmune disorder known as Guillain-Barré syndrome, in which the body's immune system mistakenly attacks part of the nervous system. Meanwhile, ventilator shortages have been largely averted in the U.S., right? A life-saving therapy, though, known as ECMO, is scarce. That means hospitals and doctors have to choose which critically ill patients get it. Sherry Fink, correspondent at the New York Times, says in the absence of regional sharing systems to ensure fairness and match resources to needs, hospitals and clinicians are left to apply differing criteria, with insurance coverage, geography, and even personal appeals having an influence. Sherry, set this up.
Yes, we were all afraid of ventilators being in short supply at the start of the pandemic. There was a lot of planning around that, fears of rationing. And, you know, there was a lot of concerted action to make sure that that didn't occur. That was something we didn't want to see in the U.S. and were able to avert. But a quiet drama has been playing out inside hospitals over a different treatment. It's more of a last resort treatment for people who have severe COVID, whose lungs are failing, where even the ventilator isn't helping. And this is sort of like a heart-lung machine. It's similar in concept, where the blood goes out of your body. It's connected to a series of pieces of equipment that add oxygen, like your lungs would do if they were working, take out the carbon dioxide, and then pump that blood back in. And it helps the lungs rest. It gives the body a chance to recover, and keeping that person alive, keeping that critical oxygen going to the brain. And so doctors, you know, use this for other things, sometimes after heart surgery, sometimes in bad flu cases. And they said, let's see, you know, at the start of the pandemic, could this help some patients who really would otherwise die? And in fact, at first, it looked like more than half of the people who were, you know, otherwise pretty much going to die ended up recovering and being able to be, you know, their life saved with this very, very intensive treatment. It's about 50% now. And but the problem is, it's really rare. Like you said, it is not available. It's less than 10% of hospitals have it, and they have very limited ability to run it, not really so much because of the equipment, but because it takes an extraordinary amount of staffing to watch the patient, you know, like a hawk, because their blood is leaving their body, coming back in. And so what happened was, doctors literally were put in the position of deciding between individual patients who would get that chance at life.
Mm. We're speaking with Sherry Fink, correspondent at The New York Times. Her piece is called The Rationing of a Last Resort COVID Treatment. And she looked at this system called ECMO. So you're a physician also. What is it like to have a conversation with the family in which you have to tell them, or you're suggesting to them, your patient is on ECMO, but we need it for somebody who has a more realistic chance of surviving?
So the article I wrote in the New York Times, it starts with exactly such a conversation. And I was there, I spent time in many hospitals over the last year and a half just observing. And, it, you know, it's like clear that there's not enough to go around, but that doesn't, you know, there are these choices that doctors are making patients that do have an impact. So even though right now it's very hard to expand the capacity, they're working on that. They want the technology to get better so it won't take so many resources. But they have to make these choices, which can have life and death consequences. And so I watched a doctor, a really caring, wonderful doctor, talking to a family whose loved one had been on this technology for a while, wasn't doing well. The doctors had been recommending for a number of days that they be, you know, that the family let go and allow that patient to pass. And the difficulty was, you know, you remember the horror of families not being able to visit their loved ones in hospitals. And
man,
so very hard to get your mind wrapped around saying goodbye when you can't even physically go in. And then the doctor was trying to explain that there were other patients waiting, that the hospital's at capacity for this technique. And the family just stopped the doctor right there and said, are you saying that you want this machine for somebody else? And that was such a tough, tough moment.
I don't think Sherry Fink, correspondent at The New York Times. Coming up next, the mic drop. Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business, and be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today. Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it looks like we may be getting to the point where trusting Tampa Bay teams with sports trophies may not be such a great idea. You'll remember we told you back in February how a tipsy Tom Brady made everybody nervous when he decided to heave the Super Bowl trophy over the water to a teammate during the Buccaneers celebratory boat parade. Thankfully, Brady completed the pass and no one needed to dredge the bay in search of the Lombardi Trophy. Flash forward to yesterday and the Tampa Bay Lightning may have a bill coming their way after the Stanley Cup appeared to suffer some pretty major damage during their celebration. A beat writer for The Athletic posted a picture of the cup after the latest boat parade with one side of the bowl of the cup looking significantly dented. Thankfully, the Stanley Cup that was damaged is the traveling Stanley Cup that's used for celebrations like this. The original cup sits at the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, safe and sound.
Now we know why.
Yes, I think mm-hmm. that's a good idea. We've seen the cup in all kinds of places over the years. I think it's good they have the real one
right.
sitting someplace else.
And it's safe in Toronto because obviously the Maple Leafs are not going to win a Stanley Cup,
right.
so it's good there. I think it's being repaired in Montreal.
Right.
They don't have to worry about winning a Stanley Cup or being damaged there. So.
Right. And there were some jokes going around about that as well.
Yeah.
Some of the irony of that it goes to those cities and just to be repaired and just to be stored,
right.
not
right.
to be actually taken around and paraded
right.
with.
I might have ripped off those jokes
yeah.
from social media to use them as my own.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But we cannot, you know, the folks in Tampa, they like to celebrate.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, now Title Town USA, the Tampa Bay area.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, nothing but trophies floating around down there.
And the Stanley Cup playoffs, I know they just ended, but doesn't the hockey begin tomorrow? Like, doesn't the season start up again?
That tends to be how it works. Yeah. But pretty much when they're done with the celebration, they go back to training camp.
As soon as they refreeze the ice in July.
Right. And we all know the old saying about the fury of a woman scorned. We may need to add something to that proverb about not leaving your car keys lying around. This after a woman in China deliberately ran nearly 50 red lights in an effort to get her ex in trouble. Local authorities say the woman hatched the plan to get revenge on her ex-boyfriend who left her for another woman. In another twist, another man was promised a date with this woman if he helped her in this red light running scheme. The two were eventually stopped by police after running 49 red lights.
Jeez.
And both were arrested.
I don't think I would do that in China. I just think the authorities treat violations like this a little differently.
Well, as you can see, they were arrested. I'm not sure necessarily here they would have been arrested for even for 49 red lights.
Mm.
Maybe if she was drunk, maybe if they were intoxicated, something like that. But if they were sober, I'm not 100% sure they would be arrested here.
So she hatched this plan.
Yeah.
To get back at him.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder why he left her in the first place.
Right, well, yeah,
you know,
sure.
It might be something to that.
Yeah.
Might be something to that.
Yeah, I may need a post-game interview on this with him.
And what's the knucklehead thinking by, like, getting a date with her by agreeing to participate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something tells me this relationship is not not destined for a long-term thing.
Agreed. Thanks, Mike.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Do you live in a city that's stressed out, or is your area pretty chill? Stress is inevitable, right? Everyone experiences some of it normally, but the COVID-19 pandemic has created more of it. To determine the cities where Americans cope best, WalletHub compared more than 180 cities across 41 metrics. The data set ranges from COVID cases to average weekly work hours to divorce and suicide rates. The city experiencing the most stressed? Cleveland, Ohio. Number two on the list, Detroit, followed by New Orleans, Baltimore, and Newark, New Jersey. Stress is not always a bad thing, but when it gets unmanageable, it can cause health problems and loss of productivity. Also in the top 10 of most stressed out cities, San Bernardino, California, Birmingham, Alabama, North Las Vegas, Philadelphia, and Memphis. By one estimate, workplace-related stress alone costs society more than $300 billion per year. Next hour, the cities with the least stress. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Firefighters in California and Oregon have made progress battling two large wildfires that have burned around 240,000 acres in an extreme heat wave. The Beckwith Complex, the largest wildfire burning in California, has burned more than 92,000 acres and is about 26% contained. But forecasters say a heat dome means temperatures could remain well above average all week in some areas. Gert Zutendijk of the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office spoke with NBC.
Normally we see fire behavior like this in these big fires. not until August or September.
The heat is straining power grids and fueling wildfires in six western states.
Number two.
Cuban police are out in force on the country's streets as the president is accusing Cuban Americans of using social media to spur a rare outpouring of weekend protests over high prices and food shortages. President Biden expressed support for the protesters.
The United States stands firmly with the people of Cuba as they assert their universal rights, and we call on the government of Cuba to refrain from violence. There are attempts to silence the voice of the people of Cuba.
The demonstrations, some of the biggest displays of anti-government sentiment seen in years in tightly controlled Cuba.
Number three.
Alan Weisselberg, longtime chief financial officer for the Trump Organization, has been removed as an officer at some of the company's subsidiaries. Weisselberg's removal comes after prosecutors recently accused him and the Trump Organization of a 15-year tax fraud scheme. The Wall Street Journal reports Weisselberg was terminated last week as director at Trump International Golf Club Scotland. President Biden will travel to Philadelphia today to warn Americans that the constitutional right to vote is under assault and call on them to fight efforts in Republican-led states to pass laws that restrict voting access. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Biden will make the moral case for why denying the right to vote is a form of suppression and silencing American voices. Well, if you're in need of a goat, you can get a free one in Hawaii. State officials will hold a lottery to distribute goats to the public in an effort to preserve a national park. 700 goats considered an invasive species will be up for grabs. If you win one, you have to have at minimum a 16-foot enclosed trailer to pick it up.
Wouldn't they get along with your cats?
Goats?
That'd be a nice little addition. Yeah, cats and
They're
goats.
They're kind of smelly, though.
At Jen's house.
I don't know what I'd do with it.
Coming up next, America's problem with goldfish. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us. Some American lakes have a goldfish problem. The Washington Post says it goes something like this. Humans decide they no longer want the goldfish in the small tank. They don't want to hurt it, but they don't want to keep it either. So the pet's owner decides to release it into a local lake or pond. That decision, experts say, is well-meaning but misguided. Officials in Burnsville, a city about 15 miles south of Minneapolis, shared photographs of several massive goldfish recovered from a local lake. A couple of them were the size of footballs. Far from being an innocuous domestic animal, a goldfish freed in fresh water is an invasive species. An organism introduced to an environment can quickly reproduce, outcompete native species, and destroy a habitat. And even though they get less attention than invasive organisms such as Asian carp or zebra mussels, goldfish are triggering warnings from government officials in Virginia, Washington State, Australia, Canada, and elsewhere. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.